Welcome back to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English, and joining me today are two very, very highly esteemed pundits ready to preview the Premier League action and the action from around Europe. Naz Kinsella from Goal UK is here. Hello, Naz.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, awesome.
Long time no see.
Yeah, new season, new me, like we said.
new Naz.
Yeah.
We were just talking off air that you've not seen our equipment upgrade.
Been upgraded, guys.
It's been upgraded.
Laser-guided voices.
Yeah, all that stuff. Also joining us from ESPN FC is Liam Toomey. Hello, Liam.
Hello, pleasure to be back.
Good to have you back. How have you been?
Pretty good. It's been a hectic few weeks on the Chelsea beat. Well, I mean, there's rarely a quiet day, but...
Chelsea beat.
Yeah, always drama.
We all know that. Well, let's start with London affairs, and more specifically, West Ham versus Spurs. Early kickoff tomorrow morning. In the midweek, Spurs beat Barnsley with minimal fuss in the EFL Cup, while West Ham got a bit of a confidence boost by giving Bolton a good pasting. One interesting stat that we were looking at in the office is Spurs have played the second most forward passes in the league so far this season. Overall playing very, very well, Naz. Is it another case of they're gonna not get the result that their performance deserves? Because that seems to be the trend so far this season.
Yeah, I thought that Llorente might be one of the factors that might tip them to get to the next level, just having some experience and somebody who could stick the ball in the back of the net, but it's not really happened, especially at home. It's been a disappointment from Spurs. So, yeah, I think that they're just falling short, especially if the sort of big... There's a sort of a big three teams emerging, I'd say, like the Manchester clubs and Chelsea, and I feel like they're going to fall short again. Of course, they play brilliant football and... Yeah, so many good players. Maybe the Champions League will be something they put a lot of sort of work into. But I think, you know, they're already falling behind in the league, aren't they?
Yeah. Liam, West Ham are exactly the sort of club that Pochettino's pressing system and, you know, quick transition play really built to sort of tear apart. Is that sort of what you see happening? West Ham especially weak in the midfield area and the season so far?
Well, ordinarily, that's exactly what I'd say. But... I mean, we all know what happened at the London Stadium last season when West Ham pretty much ended Tottenham's, not really much of a title challenge given how far Chelsea were ahead, but...
Title aspirations.
Exactly, yeah. And I feel like there's a certain sort of equivalence to make a Chelsea comparison, what Chelsea used to get with QPR, where it doesn't really matter what West Ham's form is like or what state their team's in. Tottenham will usually see the best version of them. Because they're more up for that game than any other one in the season. So, but equally, I think, you know, there could be a bit of extra motivation for Tottenham, given what happened last year, given what West Ham managed to do to them. And they may finally get to exploit another team's total lack of a home advantage.
This is what I was going to say, is that we've got two London arenas that are benefiting absolutely neither club overall. A very, very strange situation. Going back to the League Cup, we've had a question from Thomas Shanahan on Twitter. Should managers who have won either nothing ever or nothing at their current club respect domestic cup competitions and try to win them? Why don't they? I think this is referring directly to Pochettino, who's basically just flat out said, I'm not interested in the EFL Cup. I mean, maybe Thomas Shanahan's question could be for Pochettino, should you try and walk before running? Should that be the case?
I think that it would be great for Spurs to win that competition, but I don't think they're going to take it so seriously until later rounds. You often see the bigger teams, you saw it with all of them pretty much, that they rested so many players. It's because the Premier League, there's so much money on the line. You know, who holds all the financial sort of cards? It's the Premier League and the Champions League with UEFA. The EFL Cup and the FA Cup don't really earn you particularly much in prize money. The prestige is sort of dwindling as well. So because of that, really. So I think that, you know, if it gets to later rounds, it could be a good lesson for people like Harry Kane, Dele Alli, to learn what it takes to win finals, to win semi-finals. But... you know, and I sort of agree with that point. I think that a lot of Spurs fans would love it as well. But from a pure professional footballer's point of view, a professional manager's point of view, I think that league competition is still absolutely huge for the, you know, financial incentives. And it's still the benchmark of how people view your club.
But just to say quickly on that, I think it's reductive the way we always blame managers for making changes in the early rounds of cup competitions, because what's your first priority as a manager at any level, but particularly in the Premier League? It's keeping your job. So you are looking to do well in the things that you will be judged on. And owners of Premier League clubs are not judging their managers based on whether they get a run in the League Cup. you know, or the FA Cup. So that's why they make changes. I mean, the last time I checked, all the big clubs got through anyway. Yeah. Most of the time they do. Upsets are still pretty rare. And actually, I think fans quite like it because they get to see players on the fringes, young players. We're going to talk about Chelsea in a second. Mm.
Louis van Gaal was sacked as well, remember, for winning the FA Cup, and then his league competition got him the sack.
So. Yeah, exactly. It's not what they're judged on these days. There's far more money in the Premier League. That is the main target every single year, and especially for that top six, making it into that top four.
Yeah. But going back to Shanahan's question, is there an argument that managers like Poch, he's not won a trophy yet, should he be targeting something like that? Spurs haven't won a trophy since they last won the League Cup, which was almost 10 years ago, I think, now. Is there an argument that a club like Spurs, a manager like Pochettino, should just try and get this under his belt? Although there is the risk. We saw Klopp go for the League Cup last season, get dumped out by Southampton. It's quite embarrassing. Put a lot of resource in terms of player and coaching in there. So is there an argument that Pochettino should just try and get like a little notch on his belt, or just Premier League?
Well, we saw this with Mourinho last year, didn't we? But at United, where he just decided to go for the Europa League and the League Cup. But he basically punted on the league in the last 2 months of the season. They finished sixth, you know, and he was taking a huge risk because if they hadn't won the Europa League, he probably wouldn't be Man United manager right now.
Good point.
So that's the risk, that you basically attack these competitions at your own peril as a manager, because only one team can win. And there are six big clubs. You usually have to beat one, maybe two of them at least to win the competition. So I can understand the logic, and I can see why you might say that Pochettino and Klopp, who hasn't won anything at Liverpool yet, would certainly do well to maybe ingrain that mentality in their players. But equally, they'd argue that they're trying to win the league.
Mm. Good point. We mentioned Southampton earlier, and as they're hosting Man United, in form Man United, this weekend, Southampton themselves got knocked out by Wolves in midweek, which was a big upset. Wolves doing business out in the Championship, odd but interesting business. But United march on after very impressive displays by Martial and Rashford in a 4-1 pounding of Burton. United are joint top with City. They're cruising through games at the moment, except for that Stoke blip, which is a bit unusual. Do you expect them to just steamroll Southampton? The goals just seem to be flowing for United at the moment.
Yeah, well, I think Man United are clear favourites, but Southampton are decent, and they got back to winning ways last weekend. I think that, you know, it's not going to be an easy game. It never is. It's the old cliche in the Premier League. But yeah, Man United's so impressive. Just everything seems to have clicked. The younger players seem to have got better. I think that's a really understated factor. You know, people have been saying the new signings, Matic and Lukaku, have lifted them, and of course they have. But it's also like you see Rashford and Martial's performances, and the way they all, the way they're moving around the pitch, it seems to have clicked. The team has better balance, and I think that attacking wise, a lot of the younger players have really come good. And some of the defenders needed a bit more experience. Bailly was brilliant last year, but every year he gets under his belt in a Man United shirt is going to be huge for him. The Stoke game was a blip, but it wasn't a terrible result, was it, really?
No, not the worst result. Liam, I was saying this to one of the colleagues, one of the Squawker staff the other day. I think this is the most attacking, incisive attacking Mourinho side I've ever seen. I can't remember, except maybe the Real Madrid counter-attacking side, but in terms of turning possession into goals, the goals are just coming from everywhere for this Mourinho side.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they've got a wealth of attacking options, and it's one hell of a luxury to be able to bring Anthony Martial off the bench after 60, 70 minutes when the other team are exhausted. They are playing a bit more in possession. I kind of see what you're saying, but they are still primarily a transition team. In terms of where a lot of their goals come from, it's from intelligent pressing in the opposition half, you know, making teams pay for their mistakes, which Mourinho teams have always been fantastic at. All the best Mourinho teams. And I think what we're seeing this year is that they've got so much more pace everywhere in that attack.
So
they've got pace out wide. We mentioned Martial, but they start games with Rashford, Mkhitaryan. Mkhitaryan's probably one of the fastest number 10s in transition around. And having Lukaku up front instead of Ibrahimovic. I know Ibrahimovic scored a lot of goals last year, and he was probably the most impressive 35-year-old I've ever seen in the Premier League. But there's just a different dimension to that attack with Lukaku there. The threat of him running in behind, I think, completely transforms United. And that's why I thought at the start of the season they'd win the league, and I've not really seen anything to change my mind yet.
One player who's been a standout for Southampton this season is Mario Lemina, who's coming from Juventus. Very, very tidy midfielder, has really helped out Oriol Romeu in that sort of holding role. Do you think that's a player who's going to profit from Pogba's absence? Pogba's been sent away on holiday, actually, by Mourinho to try and recover from his hamstring, because I think he looked pretty annoyed when he got injured. Do you think Lemina can make an impact in the game?
Yeah, definitely. He was always going to be a great sign. It's a great coup, a very Southampton sign as well. A young player that you can take on to the next level and make a huge, a huge amount of profit on it, his next sale. But Lemina was always good at Juventus, and it was a really smart move to identify him and bring him in. But what surprised me about him is how quickly he's adapted to the Premier League. Because Pogba didn't adapt quickly when he moved from Turin to the Premier League. So yeah, I think that he'll be definitely the danger man. I think Man United have enough alternative options in midfield. Ander Herrera's been absolutely pushed to one side all of a sudden after Matic came in. So I think he's still a great player. And, I think Pogba's start to the season was sensational. It is a huge blow to Man United. But, Lamina will have opportunities in that game, and he'll be looked to for Southampton to create something.
We've actually got a question from Jamie Wilkes on Twitter. Is that, what do we make of the impact of Pogba's absence? Liam, it's very noticeable when Herrera came in and Pogba played in the 10 role, how much slower United's build-up was and how little control they had over the midfield compared to when Pogba's in that deep role. Do you think this could be sort of make a bit of an impact on their title challenge?
Well, I mean, it depends how long he's out for. Hamstring injuries, it really depends how serious it is. But it certainly does change the entire complexion of their midfield, because they don't really have another midfielder who can do even a passable impression of everything that Pogba does. I think the most crucial thing he brings is that ability to carry the ball through the middle of the pitch at speed, as you mentioned, which when Herrera's in, I mean, Herrera's a player of many gifts, but that's not necessarily one of them. So they may have to change and adapt a little bit, but I still expect them to play broadly in the Mourinho style, to keep Southampton on the back foot and then try and push them into mistakes in bad areas of the pitch. I think they'll have too much for them this week, but if Pogba's out for a long time, any team missing a player as talented as he is will suffer for it.
Yeah, well, still, Matic, Herrera and Carrick, not bad replacements. And we haven't even talked about Marouane Fellaini. moving on to Stoke versus Chelsea at Britannia this weekend. Chelsea buried Nottingham Forest. Very impressive performance from Batshuayi. Stoke got knocked out by Bristol City. A bit unexpected. Is Batshuayi knocking on the door for a starting spot here, Naz? Because every time he plays, he seems to get goals, assists. He looks so hungry to play. Is it a matter of time before Conte tries him out up front, maybe alongside Morata?
Well, I like Batshuayi, and I think he's clearly a brilliant finisher. He's been absolutely putting teams to the sword that are like lesser teams, Carabag, Nottingham Forest. But I still think that, having watched him live several times and watching Morata live as well, week in, week out, I think there's a complete difference in what Morata offers in terms of build-up play, in terms of, the stuff that doesn't get you a goal. I think that Morata's way ahead in terms of movement off the ball, just interchanging with the two attacking midfielders that play in behind him.
I think everyone's underestimated how intelligent Alvaro Morata is as a player. He's definitely in that mould.
Great to see him live. It's I thought that he might be a step down from Diego Costa in terms of a lot of the sort of passing and moving and sort of work rate. He's a different kind of player in terms of occupying defenders, but he's still great. He's actually better in behind, like running in behind defences. He's very intelligent at that as well.
Finds the gaps nice and easy.
Yeah. So I think that that's where Michy lets himself down or needs to improve, is that he needs to improve in those sorts of areas. His finishing is brilliant. That hat-trick was great. He scored two against Carabag, but actually his overall performance wasn't brilliant. He wasn't one of the outstanding performers. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that he can push for a spot, but I think he's still below it at this stage of the season.
A good option for the EFL Cup and Carabag, at least. You mentioned Diego Costa. The big news is obviously Diego Costa has signed a deal. Well, agreed a deal. The deal's going to happen with Atletico Madrid. He's going to move there in January. Plus 50 million plus fee, I believe, is the discussed.
Well, what I've been told is 58 million which which, you know, happens to be more or less pretty much exactly what they paid in terms of an initial fee for Morata as well.
For a 28-year-old.
Yeah, well, pretty good business. A world-class 28-year-old, it has to be said. He's still one of the best pure number nines in the world, Costa.
Injury-prone, though. Tempestuous.
He didn't suffer too much with injuries last year. It was other things that were that were affecting him in the second half of last season.
But Chelsea always seem to get good prices for their players, though.
Well, I feel like, I mean, in the current market, that's 58 million is probably quite conservative, but given the circumstances, it's probably the best Chelsea could have done. They had almost no leverage in this situation. You've got a striker who knows he's surplus to requirements. You know, that was the only real mistake Conte made in sending that text message, was giving Costa leverage. You know, everyone knew before that it was going to end this summer. But the fact that, you know, he declared he would only consider a move to Atletico and actively rejected any other approaches from other clubs, and the fact that Atletico had no incentive to do a deal, you know, anytime soon because of their transfer ban. So I think in light of all those things, Chelsea did pretty well to get 58 million for him, but it's also a mark of just how good Costa is, because in the second half of the season, if Atletico get him fit and get him ready to hit the ground running, I think they're going to be a serious threat in the Champions League.
Yeah, he can play Champions League.
Griezmann up front will be pretty frightening.
Dangerous. We'll talk a bit more about Griezmann later, because there's some consequences there. Going back to Stoke, can we expect to see Hazard starting this weekend, finally? I think, I think Conte's managed his injury. He's coming back from injury very, very well. It's really refreshing to see a manager do that, because, you know, we saw with Ousmane Dembele, who's rushed back from injury by Valverde, and now he's injured out for 4 months. Can we expect to see him this weekend, starting spot?
It's hard to say. I think Pedro and Willian have been brilliant of late as well, so I think that's part of the reason he's been able to delay him. You know, he put Bakayoko in, remember, against Tottenham, because there was a midfield injury crisis and, you know, recruitment crisis. They were struggling to sign anyone.
That was an incredible 90 minutes that Bakayoko gave him. That was quite something.
Yeah, and you could tell he was just hanging in there. But I think he could have done that with Hazard if circumstances weren't that Pedro and Willian were playing so well, but they are. But Pedro's had a little bit of an injury from the Arsenal game. He's been injured 3 times against Arsenal now in a row.
It's not as if Conte's making a big deal out of it.
No,
as if he ever mentions it.
No, of course not.
But yeah, that's probably Conte's words coming out of my mouth there.
who do we think are going to be the biggest threats for Stoke here? Such an unpredictable team. You could have 17. They could beat Chelsea 5-0 this weekend and put in a world-class performance, having lost to Bristol City in midweek. Who are the big threats for them, from your point of view?
Well, I mean, they are a really unpredictable team. They've beaten Arsenal in Stoke this season. They drew with United. So they clearly produced their best performances on the biggest stage, really. I think Hesse has to be the clear main danger, given what he's already proven in his career in flashes at Real and at PSG. And, you know, Shaqiri can turn it on as well. Yeah. You know, those are two creative players that on their day would grace any top six team. So they're real dangers. And if Maxim Choupo-Moting, if the Choupo-Moting that turned up against United turns up against Chelsea, then it could be a tough afternoon, because he was a real handful.
They just have so many players that can magic goals up out of nowhere.
Yeah, they seem to have specialised. I mean, a lot was made of them selling Arnautovic this summer. But they seem to specialise in players that are sort of one great game in every four.
Yeah.
You know, so you never really know what you're going
to
get.
They need to sequence them up.
I think on a base level, I think they're going to be stubborn defensively. Chelsea had a tough game last year, a physical game against them. I remember Gary Cahill scored a late winner, but it was a really dramatic, even game. They won't have Kurt Zouma, of course, because he can't play against his parent clubs. That might disrupt their defensive cohesion a little bit, but they've got quite a lot of options there after the window as well, so won't be easy for Chelsea at all.
Let's fire through Man City versus Palace, another game this weekend. Noticeable is a lot of the top six are away. Man City are the only one of the top six, well, the top six in inverted brackets. We know where Arsenal are on the table. Man City are the only ones at home. They edged out West Brom in the League Cup thanks to 2 Leroy Sané goals. Palace kept it tight, a 1-0 win versus Huddersfield, which was, I'm sure, very welcome for the fans. City averaging 63% possession this season, averaging. That's not going to bother Roy Hodgson, is it?
Well, no, I think Palace are comfortable playing without the ball. So I think also Benteke's game kind of suits it as well. He's been kind of terrible this season, so it will benefit him. But yeah, I think that City just going to absolutely blow them away. That 1-0 win against Huddersfield doesn't really give me anything to sort of suggest otherwise. It doesn't give me a huge boost of confidence. Don't think most Palace fans would they'd probably be on my side on this one as well. But yeah, City are incredible. They looked a bit disjointed defensively though against West Brom, so that's the only thing that might give you a crumb of hope. Even though they won 2-1 in the EFL Cup, I thought they looked, dropping a few players, really showed attacking-wise they can bring in anyone and they just turn people over. But I think that, you know, one or two defensive injuries could scupper City's season. I think that's where they're a bit light.
Yeah, we will talk about that in a minute. But just on the attack that Naz mentioned, Liam, do you expect Guardiola to keep it the same? Aguero and Jesus seem to love playing together, which I don't think many people expected. They thought it was going to be Jesus, Aguero out, but he's turned it into a partnership.
Yeah, I think most strikers actually quite prefer playing with another striker because it takes some of the attention off them and they can get a little bit more space, especially if you're a guy like Aguero who's strong but a bit smaller. You know, the amount of kicks he takes in games might have actually contributed to his injury record over the last few years.
But
they've really clicked into gear as a team and as an attack in the last few weeks. We're finally seeing, you know, before the season I thought they might be able to break the Premier League record for goals in a season, which was 103. And you know, the last few weeks have certainly provided evidence of that. I think Aguero and Jesus are really, really dangerous. It's going to be an interesting one because what Hodgson does when he arrives at a team is the two banks of four, no space between the lines.
4-1, 4-1.
Yeah, and yet there's no better team in the country at finding those spaces between the lines than City. So my suspicion is it's a bit too early in the Hodgson era at Palace. I don't think he'll have got them well drilled enough to quite cope with the best attacking team in the league.
The return of like big teams behaving like big teams this season, I think it's
big teams being big teams.
Yeah, right. Acting like they're, you know, they can dominate, they can blow smaller teams away. I thought that's what the Carabao Cup reminded me of. It was a case of, you know, feeling like Man United are Man United, Man City are absolutely, you know, giant and amazing, and Chelsea can play any lineup and destroy teams as well. So like those three, I'm just starting to feel again like they're it's clicking in for all of them, and they might actually be able to achieve a lot this season, including thinking about Europe, because English teams have kind of been disappointing in Europe in recent years.
Yeah, and it's looked good to see that Pep versus Mu showdown finally coming to the fore. We've had the same question from two different people, which is astonishing, and you'll see why in a minute. Samer Arafat and Pictured City ask, will Fabian Delph be good backup for Mendy at left back? That is a niche question, and a pertinent one, because Hodgson, he hasn't got many weapons at his disposal, but he has got wingers. Palace have got wingers. They're, you know, he's got Andros Townsend, who will probably be looking at Fabian Delph and licking his lips, won't he?
That has to be the same guy with two names, surely.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If it is, you're being cheeky.
If anyone thinks about Fabian Delph, it surprises me. I forget he exists sometimes, but as a backup, probably, I'd say probably not really. Going from Mendy...
He is going to play him there. That is happening.
Well, he's played some unusual players at left back in his time. But, you know, if you're talking going from Mendy to Delph, I am just a massive Mendy fan. His consistency of delivery is something you rarely see in a left back. And can Delph do that? No. Can he create the triangles and perform in the way that City can perform? Can he be a body, Delph? Yes, he can. But can he take them to the next level? Can he provide an attacking threat from left back? I don't know. I'm kind of sceptical about that.
Slammed.
You heard it here first. Fabian Delph can be a body, and that's about it. If you need an extra for Silent Witness,
an English body, an English body for your for your quota as
he's
well.
He's just
don't
English squad meat, isn't he?
Yeah.
Bless
body.
His heart. I really like Fabian Delph. Well, you know, wasn't too fond of what he did to Villa, but there you go. Let's move on. Leicester City versus Liverpool. Complete repeat of the midweek game. Leicester made Liverpool look completely ordinary in midweek. Liverpool, one stat we found this week is they have the fewest number of clearances in the league. Now, they don't exactly have exceptional ball-playing centre-backs. Jurgen Klopp wants to play a certain way. but surely there's a need to get rid and stop inviting pressure onto your defence, because that's where they're losing games.
Yeah, there, I think there certainly is. And I think it comes down to individual composure, doesn't it, of defenders. Not just not clearing their lines, but when they're doing it badly and putting the ball into dangerous areas that other teams can capitalise on. I mean, Liverpool haven't been good enough defensively for quite some time, and the idea that there was only one centre-back in the world this summer that could solve that problem was a bit strange, given that the guys in residence are Dejan Lovren, Ragnar Klavan and the like. I think it's going to continue to hold Liverpool back, whether it does in this game or not. I mean, in a lot of ways, Leicester are set up ideally to counteract that, as we saw in the week. They'll force Liverpool to be a possession team, which isn't always where you see the best version of Liverpool, and then counter with pace. And they've shown already this season, I remember watching when Chelsea went there, that they were very, very dangerous in transition in that game as well. So any uncertainty in that Liverpool back line, and in goal, where Klopp has changed around again a few times already this season, very strange situation. But it all breeds uncertainty. And if they have uncertainty against Leicester, I think they will get punished.
All of those factors combined are leading to some slightly unhappy Liverpool fans. And weirdly, Klopp out seems to be gaining a bit of momentum, which is an odd thing to say, given he's such a marquee manager and they play such, frankly, delicious football at times. A loss here, could that start currying more favour towards those sort of thoughts, do you think?
Yeah, definitely could grow. It's something that he'll be wary of. No one's immune from, no matter how likeable you are, you're never immune from the...
He is very likeable now.
He is, I know, I like him. And I'm from Manchester, but his managerial merry-go-round, no one's immune. And I think that Liverpool are going to be as patient as they can be with him, give him as long as he needs, and that's what he deserves, really. I think they're going to struggle to find a better manager to come in as well. I think it was a coup to get him in the first place, so getting rid of him now, you're probably going to step down. Even if even if Liverpool haven't really progressed, it's more of a club issue. There's more than just Klopp who's influencing things. They haven't secured the targets they needed to get to the next level. You know, they're going to get Naby Keita next season, but they've got to wait. So they seem to have gone for those one-off marquee specific targets, and not really, it's been like them or nothing sort of thing. So and it's turned out it's been nothing for the defence. But yeah, I think that they also need to work on the finishing as well. They need to, some of them forwards need to start sticking the ball in the back of the net. They've been quite wasteful, I've found. Obviously they blow Arsenal away, but in other games where it's quite tight, these guys need to
You've
be more decisive.
Yeah, that's exactly what Leicester do. They're exactly the sort of team that's set up to hurt Liverpool, play deep, like playing on the break. And it doesn't look like the loss of Drinkwater's affected them at all, Liam.
No, and I think a large part of that is just the way Leicester set up. They keep things quite simple in midfield. They don't try to do anything that their players aren't capable of. Even when Drinkwater and Kante were there, the beauty of that midfield was just its simplicity, that Kante would be the roaming destroyer and Drinkwater would play passes into the channels for Vardy to chase or over the top. I think they haven't quite had as much of that dimension since he's left, the threat of the ball over the top to Vardy, but Wilfred Ndidi seems to be gradually growing into the division, and I think they've still got some decent options there. But their game is based around fast wingers and the pace of and hustle of Vardy up front, so nothing's really changed there.
Serious hustle. Everton are playing Bournemouth. Everton finally got some goals in midweek against the beleaguered Sunderland. I think if you can't score against Sunderland, you know, you're in trouble. Bournemouth got another win against Brighton, but only after extra time. That's 2 in 5 days or something. Koeman's clearly unhappy at Everton. He's probably unhappy with his own performance. He's unhappy with his team. They've only had 10 shots on target in the league this season. They look slow. They look ponderous. Bournemouth are in terrible form as well. They're just below the Toffees in 19th. This could be quite a tense game with a fair amount riding on it.
Yeah, there's two teams that have sort of been disappointing, but I think the word that I'd pick out from what you just said is slow. Slow is probably
so
the...
So slow.
It's obvious, though, with Gylfi Sigurdsson and Rooney, they're two insanely gifted technical footballers, but they are inherently slow. So if you have them two, up top. But, you know, you're only going to attack in a certain way. You're going to have to dominate the game, keep possession, win plenty of free kicks in decent positions. And they've not really been doing that. They've not been in control of games. They've absolutely... Games have passed them by. I think that, you know, and that's just totally limited Rooney and Sigurdsson's sort of potential to hurt other teams. So Calvert-Lewin's performance in midweek might be something they gives them a bit of hope, because he gives them another dimension. He does something that the other guys can't do.
It's not so much the lack of pace as the lack of a change of pace with Everton. We were watching the Atalanta game where they got torn apart by Atalanta, and someone in the office said, "This is like watching England play Germany." And it was remarkably like that. I mean, Bournemouth have been pretty woeful as well. Two teams that just can't seem to get a goal.
Yeah, and can't seem to defend either, which yeah, I think...
That's a problematic combination.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think...
Bournemouth could never defend.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the players that Everton signed this summer, you knew, you had a suspicion that they were going to be quite a slow team. I think that that's been borne out to the extreme in the first few games. But what has surprised me is just how bad they've been defensively. Because,
rubbish.
You know, Ronald Koeman, great centre-back. His Southampton team were always very competent defensively. And they've got good personnel. You know, Ashley Williams has been terrible so far this season.
Keane and Williams haven't gelled at all.
No, it's strange because Keane was easily the best thing about Burnley, a Burnley team that was renowned for their defence last season. Ashley Williams has been a solid Premier League defender for several years. So I can't really see what the cause of the problem is there. Maybe just that there's a bit of an uncertainty because Pickford's a new keeper as well. But, you know, they need to sort out that half of the pitch, because it's going to be difficult to solve their pace problems until January, or at the very least, and until I'm not sure when Yannick Bolasie is back. But
Yannick Bolasie, you know, could be a game changer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's certainly a player that it will take him a while to be the Yannick Bolasie that we know.
Yeah.
But he's certainly a player that can inject that change of pace they so desperately need.
Something that we mentioned before, it's strange that they wanted to offload Kevin Morales, someone who is absolutely lightning quick. They were trying to offload him, and he's totally ostracised from the squad. Bizarre. Brighton are playing Newcastle. Brighton are out of the EFL Cup, as we mentioned. Newcastle also out. They got knocked out by Forest in the previous round. But if Newcastle win and other teams don't maybe get the results they need, they could be in second place by the end of the weekend. How is Rafa doing this?
I don't know, honestly. It seems to be set pieces and dominating.
Sheer will.
Yeah, just seems to be. Well, great defensive performances as well. In recent weeks, they've had clean sheets. They've, you know, conceded only the odd goal here and there. They seem to be turning very tight games into wins. There's sort of a winning mentality and a doggedness and a sort of defiance in amongst the group. But it seems like there's a good team spirit there. And I think that as much as they've got very, very little to work with, there's very little talent, particularly up front. That's what most worries me about Newcastle, is that Josselu has already disappointed at one club, and he doesn't look amazing up front, but he's leading the line, causing enough problems, and you know, each different player chipping in, and Richie looks like a bit of a gem. His consistency of delivery is very good, so they're just about doing enough to turn these games from draws to wins, and that's climbing them up the table.
These two teams, whenever they played in the Championship last season, cracking games, really, really fun. Brighton always looked to have the measure of Newcastle, but Newcastle would just get some moments out of nowhere. Do you expect it to be another cracker, or much, much tighter?
Well, I mean, if you're going on what they've produced in the Premier League so far, you wouldn't suggest it would be a cracker. I mean, I think Newcastle's success in the opening weeks, as Naz said, I think it's shown the value of having defensive organisation from day one, when everyone else is bedding in new players. And you know, people are getting used to each other, new coaches as well. I think that stability of their defence, and having an elite defensive coach in Benitez, has really been the foundation for their success. Brighton have really struggled to score goals. I think they've got a lot of players, predicted them to go down before a ball was kicked. I hadn't seen them too much in the Championship, but it was just looking at the talent they had available, because there are a lot of players in there whose reputations don't go higher than the Championship. So there's a lot to prove for them. Pascal Gross looks a good pickup.
Very, very good.
Yeah, very good set pieces. He can be maybe a reliable source of attack for them. But they don't appear to have a lot else. I mean, I actually think there'll be relatively few goals in this game. I think it could be 1-0 either way.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on it. Swansea host Watford. Swansea march on in the EFL Cup with a 2-0 win versus Reading. Watford are already out. Tammy Abraham, weird story, Tammy Abraham declared he would play for Nigeria in international football, which means that their forward line Nigeria is going to be Iheanacho, Alex Iwobi and Tammy Abraham, which is really exciting to see. He's one of the few young English talents we actually get to see on the pitch, with Chalobah also available for Watford. Tactically, Naz, this is probably one of the most interesting games of the weekend. We've got two young coaches, really, really well-versed tactically, both very continental approach to the game. How do you see the team setting up, and how do you see it panning out?
I think it could be quite tight affair. Swansea seem to have gelled really well defensively again. Their performance away to Spurs was an example of that. I think that Clement is tactically sort of very he's been brought up in a good education with Ancelotti, obviously, and at all his big clubs, and I think that it's going to be tight. I don't know if Watford started brilliantly this season, but I still can see them stuttering a little bit. I think that they're going to be a mid-table side again, so it would surprise me if they win. I think Swansea might be they might take advantage and just nick this game. I think that the recent performances have shown that they might start to put together a few, results, I think.
Last game in the Premier League this weekend. It's not exactly a thriller, I am sorry. Burnley versus Huddersfield, no disrespect to either of them. Burnley got knocked out by Leeds. Leeds are killing it in the Championship. They're just winning every game that's put in front of them at the moment. Huddersfield themselves were knocked out by Palace, as we mentioned earlier. Two very good managers getting more than the sum of their parts out of both squads, but this could be a bit of a lesson for Huddersfield in welcome to Premier League football, getting sliced and diced.
Well, it could be. It's very contrasting styles, isn't it?
Very.
Burnley, a very pragmatic team, very organised. Huddersfield, all about the high press. I do think Burnley have that little bit extra experience. It already feels a little bit like the wind has gone out of Huddersfield's sails after that first three or four weeks. I mean, the fixtures were very kind.
And it still gave in the top six, though.
Yeah, and it gave them an opportunity to get points on the board, which is crucial for any promoted team in August and September. But I think I'd fancy Burnley to take this one. They're very, very strong at home. And especially if they can continue to get goals out of Chris Wood, I think they could do well this season.
Chris Wood. How did Leeds sell Chris Wood and get better? How does that work? No idea. Let's look at the rest around Europe, the games. There were a lot of midweek fixtures and what's coming up. Probably the big news is that Real Madrid continue their disappointing league form. They lost 1-0 to Real Betis. They're currently in seventh. We had a lot of questions about Real Madrid. Most of them were a bit hyperbolic, I'm going to be honest. So I've chosen Andrew Christensen's one, who says, should Madrid start to worry? After their loss to Real Betis, they've only got an 8 out of 15 available points in the league. And as we know, title challengers in the Premier League can drop points. They can in Serie A, but in the Bundesliga and in La Liga, typically you don't drop a lot of points if you want to have a chance at winning the title.
Yeah, it's not usually so competitive. Teams don't usually go to the Bernabeu or the Camp Nou and think they can win or get any points. And that's what really stuck out about that Betis goal.
24 passes, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just like players getting forward, taking risks. And Real Madrid almost seemed, this doesn't happen to us. This doesn't happen to us.
We're Real Madrid, you can't do that.
Yeah, this is our time. We score in the 97th minute. Just the way that, he had a... They put in a free cross and unmarked at the far post, knocked it in. I was just a bit surprised. It looked like the way that Real Madrid defended it, they were completely shot. But they've got a lot of injuries as well, which is a huge issue for them. And they've sold players like Morata, loaned James to buy for Bayern. So things like that, these would be the guys who would have stepped in, and they've kind of gone with young Spanish players, some of them from their academy, some of them from other teams, and they're not really ready. They've not got that winning mentality, and this injury crisis has thrown them in too early, I feel.
Dani Ceballos, who was touted to get a lot of minutes, hasn't had a kick yet. But also there's a few theories around. We also had questions about a club in crisis. There's a few theories going around that Real Madrid have been very busy announcing new deals this week. New deal for Benzema, new deal for Carvajal. Do you think that sort of stability for some of the key players will bring a turnaround in form? Do you think maybe some uncertainty was leading to these weak performances?
I think maybe more complacency. I mean, when you play as well as Madrid did last year, especially in the Champions League, they weren't just the best team in Europe. They were the best team in Europe by a distance. Mm. And they continued to look that way, you know, in the Super Cup at the start of this season. But I think when you're that dominant, and particularly when you're looking at Barcelona and they appear to be in utter disarray on an institutional level and on the pitch, I don't think that helps focus the minds. And we've seen, you know, before from Real Madrid that particularly, you know, guys like Sergio Ramos, talented as they are, can lose focus at times and get bored. Go to sleep. Yeah, and I watched that Betis goal. I mean, it was really impressive from Betis, but I mean, I saw a different goal, which was Madrid completely falling asleep. Mm. No pressure on the ball. They just allowed the opposition to do whatever they wanted. Mm. I think they'll get their act together.
It's only a matter of time.
It's early season, teething problems. The Ronaldo suspension didn't help either.
The big news in La Liga this weekend is that it's Atleti versus Sevilla. Sevilla are just slowly just clawing that second best team in Spain. After the big two, Barca and Real Madrid, they're taking that third best team mantle from Atleti under Sampaoli. But the big news for Atleti is the Costa deal, obviously. And now there's going to be a million and one question marks over Antoine Griezmann. So the good news is we get 6 months of Costa and Griezmann, which is brilliant because Gamero hasn't been a success for Atleti. But then we've got a whole summer of wondering where Griezmann's going to go because everyone thought he was going to go to Man United, but now they've got Lukaku. Where's Griezmann's going
to
go?
No, but I think that was the plan. Seems to have some sort of tie, sort of an emotional tie to Man United. I think his brother's a fan, isn't he? And he they probably grew up watching him, and Pogba as well, being a mate of Griezmann's. It gives United a bit of an edge, but in a prospective transfer, everyone's going to want him. He's so good.
Who needs him?
No one needs him, but they'll find a spot for him, you know. Yeah.
And, PSG have got a spare 300 million, haven't they?
PSG, they don't need another striker. Maybe Arsenal will want to get all the France strikers in one squad.
Well, I think they'd dream about him, but Thomas Lemar rejected them on deadline day, so I don't think that bodes well for any Griezmann transfer in the future unless they do something this season. So, yeah, a lot of Griezmann's mind will be made up by who does well over the course of the season. He's going to make his mind up by saying, oh, this is the team that are going to get me the Ballon d'Or, is going to get me the Champions League and all these other trophies that he dreams of winning. So that's probably what's going to make his mind up.
On a serious note, I mean, PSG could be a genuine suitor for Griezmann next summer, because if you look at the chemistry issues at the moment with Cavani and Neymar, there's only going to be one winner if that becomes it's me or him situation.
He's more of a marquee player as well.
And a French player, which I think has always been quite important to PSG strategically. It's part of why they went for Mbappe. And you could see maybe Mbappe moving centrally and Griezmann and Neymar playing off him.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, that's possible.
They've got to pay for Mbappe next summer, though.
it will only make UEFA eyes squint further. But
yeah.
I mean, United are still a possibility as well, because you could, in theory, play Griezmann where Mkhitaryan plays. But the thing is, Mkhitaryan is really making that role his own so far this season. Mm. He finally looks to have settled in English football. So no obvious role, but I'm sure teams would make room for him.
Teams will go for it. I'll say I've got a cheeky feeling that Juventus or Bayern will be knocking. Speaking of Juventus, the Turin derby is this weekend. At the moment, we're seeing a lot of praise for Dybala. Question marks over Higuain. Juve they sold Bonucci, they sold Lamino, who's a really key squad player for them, and Napoli are this emerging team that everyone's just drooling over. It looks like there might be a power shift in Serie A.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of stuff's happened to Serie A that's really, really improved the league. The Champions League change in terms of, you know, automatically having four Italian teams in the Champions League, that's going to be great for Italy, huge for Italy. They don't have the Premier League sort of commercial deals and all that, so the Champions League is that much bigger for them. It makes it competitive. Then you've got the ownership of the Milan clubs. Napoli just runs so well. Sarri's a tactical genius.
Some of their build-up players just...
Sensational. And that goal from Mertens recently, that was just obscene. If you haven't seen it, it's been compared to a goal Maradona scored. A lot of people in Naples will be dreaming of winning the Scudetto. They've not won it since Maradona's days. So, yeah, it's definitely competitive. And Juve have slightly gone backwards. They had their big season last season, and I think losing in the Champions League finals took the wind out of their sails. Mm. That was the big dream, and they stopped short, and they also got battered in the final. Mm. So I think that there's a bit of a hangover there, and the Bonucci thing has slightly evened it out as well.
But no AC Milan as of yet. We're still waiting for them to click into gear. We're almost running out of time, but let's have a quick game of Would You Rather. It's been a while. Liam, Carabao, Capital One, or Carling?
Have you tasted a Capital One?
No.
Well, have you tasted a Carabao, actually? They're not much better.
They're not much better. You're getting off message here.
I'd go Carling.
Carling, Naz?
Carling as well, yeah.
Lads. Wagner or Benitez? They're both in the top six. Do you go for the possession-based manager or that defensive solidity, Liam?
I mean, if you were going to go Wagner, you'd probably just go Klopp, wouldn't you? So I'll go Benitez.
Benitez, Naz?
Upset Chelsea fans there. He's not the most popular manager at Chelsea, but I go Benitez too. That track record,
I'll give it.
And the loyalty to go down and bring your team back up, even though you're a big time manager, it's impressive. I love it.
Naz, a bit more of an exciting one. Sarri or Allegri?
Probably go Sarri just for the romance and having seen Napoli.
All about the
play.
Narrative.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I just want somebody else to win the league in Italy, is that too much to ask?
Apparently so. Liam?
Allegri, I think. I like his ability to sort of, in the classic Italian tradition, go into a squad and go, right, what have I got? And then adapt his system to his best players rather than foisting a system on the players he inherits.
And finally, Rashford or Mbappe, Naz?
I think that's quite an easy one for me. Mbappe, I just get a sort of feeling when I watch him play that...
You get a feeling?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes...
Maybe you want to stop talking?
Sometimes it doesn't make any sense, but you just know a player is going to be class or going to be world class, and like instantly from watching Mbappe as an 18-year-old, you don't get that too often with players, and you just sort of know that he's sensational. He's going to go to insane heights in the game.
Liam, British or you're going for Mbappe?
I really, really like Rashford, but when I saw Mbappe sort of explode into the Champions League last season, he's the most natural finisher I've seen at 18 since Owen. Mm. So, I think there's something really special going on with him.
Quite the accolade. Let's round off the pod with a quick Q&A, a very quick Q&A this week. Two slightly off message but interesting questions. Lack of Dignity has asked us best value for money at Arsenal in terms of signings. He points out Giroud was 12 million, Cazorla was 19 million, Bellerin was 1 million, Koscielny was 10 million. Which out of that list do we think was the best value for money in terms of Arsenal signings?
Well, Bellerin's probably the best player on the list and he's the cheapest, so I'll go Bellerin. But I think that it's also a victory of Arsenal's coaching that they've developed him from such a young age into such a great player. He's brilliant at Stamford Bridge. He seems to get better and better, and he's not hit his peak yet. Mm.
Terrible hairstyles, though. Yeah.
Rubbish left back as well, as we when he was playing there. And the final question that we've got, Mr. Walker Porter asks, very, very interesting one, is Neuer's re-injured his foot again, so he's out for at least until 2018. Liam, what's the impact of Neuer's absence at Bayern? I mean, he is quite totemic in terms of, as he is Bayern Munich in many ways.
Yeah, yeah, and even more than in a symbolic sense. I think if it was still Guardiola's Bayern, you wouldn't think it would make a huge impact, just because I think wasn't there a stat a couple of years ago that he conceded like six shots in about 3 months or something. Something ridiculous.
A very bored man.
Yeah, exactly. So I think with their defence looking a bit more porous and in general they're a little bit easier to play against under Ancelotti, Could be a much bigger issue, and especially given everything that Neuer brings to the table, being the most accomplished sweeper keeper in the world. Mm. I doubt Bayern's number two can replicate that quite as seamlessly, or have his presence.
There's also the fact, Naz, that Ancelotti's under a bit of pressure. There's a few more leaks coming out of Bayern compared to previous years, and there's a general feeling of discontent. So not having someone who just basically gets you 20 points a season because he just saves anything that comes near him. Now, that could be a bit of an issue.
But it's a bit unprecedented for Bayern to be in this situation as well, don't forget, because they've really had it easy for a long time. So it's about time that crisis came knocking. But yeah, it is an issue, a huge issue. He's arguably the best keeper in the world. That's what everyone compares him to. You know, he's in the bracket of Buffon at least. So it's going to be tough. They've got a lot of problems, but they're Bayern Munich, so they'll probably still win the league and they'll probably get it together.
They'll just buy RB Leipzig's goalkeeper. Yeah. Just buy Timo Horn, just buy all of them. Brilliant. That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very, very much for all of your questions. Please remember, Defending in Numbers, it's a podcast made by the makers of the Squawker Talker. That is us. It's a Deezer original. Go subscribe to that. Go subscribe to this if you're listening anywhere around the world. Thank you very much to Naz Kinsella from Goal UK. Where can we find you on Twitter, Naz?
It's Nizar Kinsella on Twitter. So I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, and that's basically my homepage. So yeah,
like, follow him. Thank you very much to Liam from ESPN FC. Where can people seek you out online?
Liam_Toomey. It's Toomey because no one ever knows how to spell it.
Okay, there you go. Toomey. Thank you very much to both of our guests. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.